one, two, three bills
held over. Then we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 bills today, so we obviously aren't going to get them all done. First bills we've got before us, so we held over House Bill 184 and 185. I told Representative Covina he didn't need to come down unless there's questions, which we can put it on the end of the agenda. What this is the authorization, the appropriation bills for the Glen Allen to Delta Transmission Intertie and aspects related to that. None of them involve the Railway Energy Fund. There's no funding source that's envisioned at this time other than the general fund. And it seemed that since it didn't fit into the Railway Energy Fund, that it was best to pass it on to finance and let them deal with it. Everyone know what we're talking about here?
No.
184, 185. This is when we had our hearing on all the intertie bills and energy bills, nearly all of them related to the Railroad Energy Fund. This was a bill that doesn't relate to the Railroad Energy Fund. And I promised the sponsor we'd take it up in that context. It doesn't use the Railroad Energy Fund. Yeah. You don't have 184, 185?
No.
You can
there it is.
There it is.
Okay.
$7 million. We held, we had three hearings on them. When I, Betty and I stayed late the other night, we heard an extra hour of hearing on this. This is what all the people were talking to the sites on, and I'd encourage us to just pass it out and
I would too.
Get rid of it.
Do you need a motion, Mr. Chair?
Representative Brown.
Still moved.
For House Bill 184 and 185.
I won't object if people mention to Representative Covina that I made the quorum to move these bills. Because I could get up and walk out at any time here.
I came in the door last.
Informally noted, not on the record.
Why not?
Well, it's on the record now. It's a tape. I'll be glad to listen. Further discussion on the merits of House Bill 184 and 185. Is there objection to move the bills? Hearing none, so moved. Another carryover is House Bill 163. I think we're on our second or third hearing on this. Extend the Board of Psychologists. We haven't had any, it's not a very controversial board. The Sunset Audit found no problems. The audit recommended 8 years. This bill is for only a 4-year extension. There's a Hess letter of intent, which gets to a point that I think Representative Donnelly has pushed for years, which is that the fees ought to reflect the costs. And this is a case where the fees have not fully reflected the costs. I don't know if you had a chance to look at this letter of intent. But the idea is to get them, encourage them to up their fees.
Great.
What are the fees?
Is there... Anne, would you like to say anything about it? We did help hold the hearing before, but you're welcome to add anything to it.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to Ms. Rutland, the current fees are $100 for a 2-year license. What it would take for them to be on an equal basis would be about $300 for a 2-year license, which is a substantial increase. However, if you compare that to new boards being formed at this time, $300 is an average cost, such as marriage and family therapists that's being considered, clinical and social workers, etc. And this is the same general type of profession. If anything, perhaps earn a bit more than some of those other categories. So that would be what it would take to get into it. We currently have 156 people licensed as either psychologists or psychological associates, which is a lesser degree, and they work under the supervision of a full psychologist. And paying the average of the $100 each, their costs have run between $25,000 and $30,000 a year to run the board. Their average income is just a shade under $12,000. So you can see there is that disparity. So a fee of about $300 a year should take care of it.
A fee of $300 a year?
I mean, $300 for the license.
For a 2 year, right.
For a two-year license.
But their average income is $12,000.
No, that they pay, that we get, the revenue that the division
pays. Oh,
sorry,
right. I was going to say $300 is way too much if your income is only $12,000.
Yeah, no, that is correct. And
that was my income last year. That was right.
The only, and then you had no questions as far as the increase on the number of hours, then? Is that a good portion of this also? Thank you.
Thank you, I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Any further discussion on House Bill 163?
Recommend the committee pass it through with individual arrest.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so moved. Next bill is House Bill 31. This bill we have not heard before. It's our first hearing on it. Representative Copen, and if you could describe the bill and what it does.
Thank you. House Bill 31 is a bill that I introduced when the previous legislature did not pass. Essentially, doctors, nurses, chiropractors, dental therapists, optometrists, and veterinarians may practice in Alaska, provided they successfully complete Alaska licensing examinations and fulfill all pertinent qualifications. There are standard equivalency examinations for these positions in throughout the United States in order to make sure that they meet American standards of academic and clinical competence. I have a constituent, Julie King Quan Pham, a Vietnamese, who is licensed to practice pharmacy in Vietnam and in France, is a graduate of the Sorbonne, the University of Paris, and is licensed to practice in the state of Washington, which has a degree for a statute allowing a degree for foreign graduates. There is the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy has examinations for foreign pharmacists. Mrs. Baum is actually not your ordinary drugstore pharmacist, but is licensed to practice at the highest level as a hospital pharmacist elsewhere. The fact that pharmacy is still operating with the old 1930s, you might say, anti-foreign provision, I think puts the profession out of step and could arguably, in fact, be a racist kind of discrimination against people like Mrs. Fong. We, I think, should bring the practice of pharmacy in Alaska in line with all the other healthcare and medical professions and bring Alaska in line with the national situation and with the national association of pharmacists and pharmaceutical examiner by allowing them to have the degree. I realize that there are some objections by existing pharmacists. However, I'm a member of the AFL-CIO, and I'd like to point out that there's a case for electricians, which I am, and plumbers, all of whom train the members of their trades and profession. The pharmacists do not. So they are trained by the graduate institutions who set the standards for the trade and profession. Thank you. Any questions?
Representative Parnell?
Are we on a phone call?
Yeah, but no one's listening, so.
Very good.
Oh, no, there are people listening now, so.
In the chair of Representative Copen, can you explain to us the variation of the difference between the American Association and this American Council? Are they two different organizations, and is there some reason why we have one instead of the other? Or could we have both of them listed? So it's either this or the other?
They're essentially, one is essentially the boards of pharmacy, and the other is the examination committee. They're related, but they're not the same often. One draws up the exam.
I was interested in knowing whether we would be into a, is there any competitive nature here between either of these associations?
No. they're both back on the entire idea.
So it isn't a matter of one wanting support from the
not
state?
Not at all.
I'm just interested because we're deleting the reference to the American Association of Colleges of Pharmacy and inserting.
That's
American
no longer in existence. That's the problem.
Is that what
it's
it is?
A change of name.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Representative. Welcome to join us at the table. Dan, did you want to testify on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ann Boudreau, Director of Occupational Licensing. The Department of Commerce supports passage of House Bill 31. This is something not just particular to pharmacy. We've had other professions, most recently acupuncture, where we had to make the same kind of a change in recognition of the fact that, number one, Alaska has a shortage in many areas, and so we don't want to narrow the scope by which people can enter the profession, but also that in many fields, some of the foreign-trained education is at least the equivalent, and in some cases even superior to what we're offering here. And so we would like to make sure, as long as there is a way of being able to rate those schools, and since it's provided here, that an American association would be able to provide that kind of rating for us, we stand in full support.
Any questions for Mr. Boudreau?
Sure.
Representative Donald.
Yeah, the department, have they talked to any of the pharmacists in Anchorage about this legislation?
Not to my knowledge. The position paper was actually prepared in February. Before I came on board with Donnelly, so I don't know if they had taken testimony from it or not.
Yeah, I didn't know whether there was a change in their position, but I did have the opportunity to meet with a group of pharmacists, Anchorage pharmacists, on the subject a few months ago, and they were still real concerned about it, and they didn't know whether those concerns had been worked out or not. And I'm certainly not an expert in this, but they raised a bunch of things that sounded like substantive concerns to me, and I didn't know whether they had been people had been contacted and talked to, or...
Well, we do have a board of pharmacy, and the board itself, I don't see any notes here in the folder where... Where we had anything of record on this. That doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. The only correspondence I have in our file is from the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy explaining what their certification program is. So I would be glad to find that information out and get back to you on it. I don't know if we would.
Yeah, maybe it's not a problem anymore. It's just that they had expressed concerns to me, and they made some what sounded like arguments, reasonable arguments.
The concerns that I might have had were answered by the fact that when the sponsor of the bill drafted it, there is language that says be fluent in the reading, writing, and speaking of the English language, and have affidavits from reputable citizens. That one is maybe, but the main thing is that there is a fluency requirement in there. Reading, writing, and speaking, so that there isn't going to be communications error or any possible resentment by customers that they had any level of insecurity as to whether or not they were being understood. And so that, I don't know, we'd have to ask the sponsor whether or not that was put in there to take into account those concerns. But we have not had any record from our board of pharmacy of complaints, and the examiner didn't mention anything to me, which they usually will try to alert me if there has been controversy.
Where is that in the bill?
It's on page one, line six.
Okay, so that's an existing law.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Robert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I recall talking to a pharmacist last summer about the possibility or the national groups looking at pharmacists actually prescribing medicines. In other words, it may be the MD no longer has to do that. You can just go to your corner drugstore and they could evaluate a patient and write the prescription and then fill it. So I'm wondering if some of the pharmacists' concerns are on some of the foreign schools' educational policies and the possible changes the United States is looking at with the educational background we covered. I'm more concerned over that possibility. But my question to Ms. Bedreau would be: when we look at changes like this within a licensed area, do we write and notify all pharmacists that there are changes coming and ask for their opinion if they choose to do so?
I don't believe that step is of the normal practice.
If not, why not? Is it the cost?
It possibly could be the cost or just the mechanics of it. Sometimes the bills come up and things are pretty fast moving. Most of them do have professional associations with either PACs or legislative, what they call them?
Right.
You know, legislative committees whose job it is to be following legislation. And I suppose we've taken the attitude that if they're a professional in their field with care and concerns about laws, that would be that they have something incumbent upon them, responsibility to watch out for these. But they get newsletters and all sorts of things that I think would be advising them that they're coming up. But we as a department have not done it. It's an interesting thought.
In the past, the Board of Pharmacy has discussed that the bill has come up before. And in fact, they have supported the bill. And so people who are active in the profession know the question is there. And there are other aspects of, for example, the chair of the Board of Pharmacy has stated that in his particular chain alone, he has 5 vacancies for pharmacists that he has not been able to fill. That's in the Cargostin chain. And most of the opposition does come from some of the pharmacists who are employed, not from the self-employed pharmacists and the people who are working in hospitals, but from people who are employed by a chain of the union pharmacists. The other aspect of this, which came to my attention later in the post-secondary commission, is the way the law is written. It does not allow Alaskans who have gone off to school elsewhere and taken degrees elsewhere to return to Alaska and work. They can work in the state of Washington, but they can't come home to Alaska.
How many other states allow foreign students to?
We should have that in the back of most other states.
Most.
Okay. Arizona, California, Delaware, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, Nebraska, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, North Dakota, Ohio, Oregon, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, North Dakota, Texas, Vermont, and Washington. I didn't count.
That's over 20. Thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Bedreau or Representative Copeland? Representative Donnelly, do you want time to try to get hold of some of the pharmacists to get the reaction? Would you hold it over until Tuesday?
I'm not real anxious about stalling the bill. It's just I would like to talk to those folks that talk to me. I mean, that would make me feel better if I could talk to them and see if they didn't have concerns anymore. I know the problem we had with it last year is the guy who's head of the Board of Pharmacy is a manager. He's a supervisor. And he needed people to fill positions, and obviously it was his benefit because this would make more cheaper labor available to fill the positions he's got, and the rank and file members weren't excited about it, but he was the head, of the Board of Pharmacy and also a manager type, right? So he wasn't a rank and file pharmacist. So I wanted to, I guess I'd appreciate the opportunity to do that. I don't know whether that's been worked out or not.
the first hearing on this bill, so if it suits Representative Kopanen's schedule, if he can, Representative Kopanen, will you be around on Tuesday if we bring it up first thing on Tuesday?
Sure.
Okay, well, we will hold this over till Tuesday first thing. Now we are faced, House Bill 163, we forgot the letter of intent.
I would move that we pass through the budget ten along with 163.
Is there objection to moving letter of intent? Hearing none, so moved. Mr. Walsh, if you could join us, we now have five bills.
Five.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All we're hoping to do today is try to get familiar with them all. We did draft them into a CS that includes them all. I don't know if there's a value in doing it that way or not. There may well be, based on the testimony, value in actually moving them separately. It's a big area, and if you could just sort of start at the beginning here and work us through as many of these as you can, that would be helpful.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the committee substitute idea, putting them into one omnibus bill, is probably a pretty good one. That's what other states faced with a similar number of bills have done in the insurance area. There is a national move by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners to accredit insurance divisions and departments. And by that they mean a number of things. One of them is a minimum level of state laws governing the solvency and operation of insurance companies to assure that there's some uniformity nationwide. Not only uniformity of laws, but uniformity of regulations, staffing, etc., so that the consumers of the country are protected. These five bills represent the last major items that we need to fulfill the statutory part of accreditation. And although these look like a lot, and indeed they are a lot of bills, we are in much better shape than a bunch of states. North Dakota has a 350-page bill covering about 11 models introduced. South Carolina just passed a 75-page bill with about 7 or 8 models. And although we are not as close on the other areas, it's really gratifying that we are only 5 models short. Much of what the legislature did last session helps that. Two of the models passed in particular are of real importance today with the executive life problem, and that is the solvency regulations and also the life and health guarantee bill. Without those, the consumers in Alaska would be in substantially more jeopardy than they are today. These five bills, as I said, are the last five. And I'll go over them briefly. Don Koch, who is the chief of market conduct, is here, and he can answer the more technical questions about the bills. But House Bill 279 deals with insurer credit reserves and investments. It sets forth what we believe are good statutory provisions having to do with the insurance company's credit reserves and investment practices. 280 sets forth statutes involving insurance holding company regulations. Anyone who has ever looked at the organizational chart of most major insurers will wind up cross-eyed because of the number of subsidiaries and holding companies, et cetera. There needs to be, Mr. Chairman?
To help me out on this, the one memo I thought looked most useful was one from you to our committee dated April 8th, which is in the back of the packet. It's only a page and a half. It seems to have 5 paragraphs related to the 5 bills.
Okay.
But if you, do you have that one?
I know that I do. If I don't, I can figure it out. Well, that's good.
If you could
yes.
work off there, it'll help because I didn't even know which one the first one you talked about was.
All right. Well, then let's work from this April 8th memo and start with the Managing General Agent's bill. As that memo states, this bill, or the Managing General Agent's model, does two things. It amends the terms to the more correct terms as they are used in the insurance industry today, and second, it creates in the statute what we consider to be a more workable statutory regime based upon how insurance is actually practiced today. The alien insurance licensure is also dealt with there. And I think that paragraph pretty much speaks for itself, that it is one of the more esoteric, I guess, points of insurance regulation. The examination bill is a bill that has received an incredible amount of attention at the NAIC. And the model that is before you, we feel, is a good one. There's a list of what we consider to be very minor amendments to essentially Alaskanize the examination bill. But again, the paragraph that's there in the April 8 memo sets it out better than my ability to relate it orally could. Similarly, the same thing is true for the reinsurance intermediary bill, and then what we call in there the miscellaneous bill. And the five bills as a whole, I think, work well as the proposed committee substitute. The position papers that you have are based on the individual bills. We've not had time to adapt those to the committee substitute, but we will do that forthwith. There's also in the packet some suggested amendments. Those have been suggested by the staff and by the Department of Law after their review in an attempt to Alaskanize the bills, the models, and also after consultation with various representatives from the industry. A number of suggestions were made for changes which we did not agree with. There were some, however, which seemed to be appropriate changes. Also, you have their fiscal notes. The fiscal notes on all of these bills are zero. And I'm sorry for that very general overview of what is obviously a very thick and very technical packet. Mr. Koch can assist me and probably do a better job than I could on my own in terms of answering any individual technical questions the committee may have.
Don, why don't you join us at the table as well on this? You know, one question for the committee before we get too far in this is whether we're going to want to have five separate bills or one combined bill. I think probably the best way to deal with this is at our next meeting on these bills to have the committee substitute before us in one form or the other. The advantage of one bill is it's, you know, less procedures to the rest of the process. The one of the disadvantages is you end up with a pretty broad title, an act related to insurance.
Okay, so
my inclination is, at this point, would be to keep them as separate bills. But I suppose if all of them were, you know, equally non-controversial or equally controversial, I think at that point it might make sense to put them back together. If we find that there's more problem with one piece or another, I'd hate to see the whole thing hung up over the piece. Anyone else have any thoughts on that?
I would be inclined to keep them separately so I'm not confused. And then maybe at the end if we wish to combine them. But I would, you know, give it up to the majority opinion.
Okay, well let's at the next meeting then have them as separate CSs just to expedite our discussion. Any general questions before we go on to some of the specifics?
Since this is new on the table, I haven't seen it until I sat down. I'd rather you continue with your discussion. I don't have any questions yet.
Okay, good. We'll probably break around 2:15 or so today unless we get in for prolonged discussion so we can see how far we get by then. Three of us are going to be up in Judiciary shortly thereafter, so there won't be much left. Committee.
He's
coming with us. Dawn is.
Can I be committee of the whole and make all these decisions?
Yeah. You can stay around. Maybe we can start back at the top again and just talk a few more minutes on each one of the pieces, starting with the managing general agents bill.
We'll start with 279. That's the reinsurance credit reserve securities and investment model.
Reinsurance describes the reinsurance intermediary bill.
No, that's not, that's 279 is not.
Oh, that's the miscellaneous bill.
You mean the bigness?
279 is the miscellaneous. Okay. Yes, that's correct.
Are you talking CS now?
So it's the.
No, no, this is the original.
This bill basically contains a number of, for the record, my name is Don Koch, I'm chief of the market surveillance section of provision of insurance. This House Bill 279 is basically what we've looked at as our miscellaneous bill. It incorporates a number of provisions from a number of model bills that, for the most part, are already in place. But needs some minor alteration, modification to bring them up to date and up to snuff in terms of what the National Association of Insurance Commissioners Accreditation Committee believes we need. So these changes that are incorporated in 279 do that. The sectional analysis that we provided with 279 has a breakdown and a references to where these things are coming from. I'm not sure how much detail you want me to roll into on this. I do have to tell you that most of these deal with financial issues, which I am roughly familiar with, but our pro Dover, so to speak, is Gloria Glover, who deals with these things on a day-to-day basis. Our financial examiners are primarily affected by the way these things go together.
Gloria is based in Anchorage.
Gloria is based in Anchorage, yes.
Maybe we can get her on teleconference. Or actually, the best thing, is there any way we could, once we schedule the next meeting, could we get her here? I mean, I really think it'd
sure.
be, I've spoken with her before, and I get a, you know, I find it to be real helpful.
She's real bright, so she knows what's going on with
this. Mr. Chairman, do we have her here on teleconference?
I was hoping we could actually get her here, if there's any way possible.
That'd be great. We would be glad to bring her down.
Yeah. We'll be enough notice for you to...
If you want to do it Tuesday, that's fine.
Yeah, well, Tuesday, Thursday, or we may have to do a special meeting, so
okay.
It'll be.
We can do it basically on 12 hours notice.
Okay.
But I ask her first.
Well,
Representative Parnell.
That would be fine.
David, can I ask a question on accreditation by the NAIC?
Uh-huh.
Are they accrediting the state of Alaska, or are they accrediting insurance carriers or underwriters?
They're accrediting the Division of Insurance for the state.
If I may expand on that, Mr. Chairman, the accreditation process is something that has come about in response to external pressures, if you will. The federal government has been looking at the idea of basically nationalizing the regulation of insurance. There have been bills in the federal Congress that would repeal the McCarran-Ferguson Act, dramatically change it. There have been discussions where the federal government is looking at the idea of installing a super agency that would basically either coordinate with the state agencies or eliminate the state agencies dealing with the regulation of insurance. In response to that, the NAIC felt that in view of the track record of the feds in dealing with regulatory issues, that they would have a hard time showing they could do it better than we could do it. State regulation is basically been improving in leaps and bounds in the past few years. State regulation of insurance has been, in many areas, and I have to say in Alaska as well, kind of a stepchild. It hasn't had what you would call pizzazz or a lot of glamour to it, and so consequently there have been other issues that basically have taken the front, and because of that, we've lagged. That has been, in the past few years, changing because of the concerns that the federal government has been expressing, and because of the NAIC, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, intent to make this thing work properly. With that in mind, they came up with a set of accreditation standards primarily focused on financial solvency issues to make sure that when an insurance company is out there operating, they're going to be able to meet their obligations. And that the states are going to have the ability to deal with making sure they meet their obligations and to head off the numbers of insolvencies that we've been seeing in the past 10 years. We've experienced a very kind of problem. I witnessed the marine fiasco a few years ago, which hurt a lot of Alaskans. And of course, currently we're experiencing the fun and games with the executive life. So there are issues in here that will tend to deal with those kinds of investments that were made by executive life and let them into the problems that they have. At any rate, the last few years that I've attended meetings of the National Association of Church Workers, they've been very heavily focused on fine-tuning this, and there's been a great deal of concern as to how the small states can get up to snuff quickly enough to be accredited. What it means to not be accredited is that any examination we do or any regulatory work that we do will be duplicated by other states who have an interest in what our domestics are doing. And I believe we have, what, 10 currently, Dave? 10 domestics?
11.
We have 11 domestic insurance companies in this state currently. If any of those 11 do business in other states, and a number of them do, they would be subject not only to the things that we do here in terms of regulation, but if we were not accredited, the other states would be sending in teams of examiners because our paperwork, our documentation as to their condition would not be acceptable, and in most cases would not be acceptable by statute. So they would have to duplicate our work. What this really gets to is that we need to be in a position to be accredited so that it will not be unduly expensive for our domestics to operate. Quite frankly, what would happen in many cases is those domestics would have to go away. And that's I think that has an effect on our economy because we employ people in those industries. The other piece of it is that we really do need to protect our own citizens, and to do that we have to have effective regulation, and that's what this whole package is aimed at. That's the end of my editorial, but I hope that gives you a little bit more about it.
It may be horse saving a lot of detail for our next work session. I'm afraid it's going to go in one ear and out the other, at least for myself. Why don't we just go to the rest of the public testimony and at least get that out of the way?
Okay.
So you're both welcome to stay at the table. Mr. George, if you could join us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm John George. I'm representing the National Association of Insurance, Independent Insurers, and the American Council of Life Insurance today. Both are insurance trade associations, one in the property casualty field and one in the life insurance field. Both trade associations support all of the bills that are being introduced today. We do have some changes that we're negotiating with the director on at the present time that we would like to see in them. But I think that the key thing is that the state of Alaska needs to get the accreditation from the NAIC. It's the thing to do, and we urge that you do that. And whether you combine them in one bill or you keep them separate, really doesn't make that much difference because they need all of them. To get half of them isn't going to resolve the problem. They need all of those bills. So we urge you to keep them moving in a package, and we'll work out our differences with the director. When we can come up with an agreement, we'll come back to you and ask for those changes then. But I don't want to stop the bill by kicking around those changes today. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jay Frank. I'm here this afternoon on behalf of State Farm, Allstate, Progressive Insurance Companies. My comments are basically the same as Mr. George's. That is that these bills in concept, we support them. We support the accreditation by the NAIC. I think it's a very good concept. We do have some concerns about some very technical natures and issues in the bills. But it's the type of thing where we feel confident we can work with the division and resolve them, and I don't want to bore you with the technical aspects of the bill here today, because we just haven't gotten to that point yet. So we feel confident that whatever concerns we have can be worked out.
Great. Well, I appreciate the fact you're working with the director. We will rely heavily on what the director says.
You're
at the right place.
Yeah.
Well, anyone else want to testify on any of these bills? What we'll do is hold them over. I'll put into the committee schedule later this week a date I can find that's mutually acceptable to committee members. It may well be an evening meeting to try to hear further. And I'll let the division know as soon as we set it up so you can try to get the right people here. Any other matters? We did pretty well today.
Evening meeting, those are true.
I didn't know.
Hey, meeting adjourned.